In today's episode of Supernormalized, we dive deep with Aaron French, a remarkable psychic medium whose transformative journey took a pivotal turn in 2020 when he experienced an awakening into non-duality. We'll explore his profound insights about time perception changes, resonant teachings from deeply influential mentors like Ram Dass, and intimate lessons learned living among Baka hunter-gatherers. Join us as we uncover Aaron's path towards unity consciousness and learn how he channels guidance, not only for himself, but also for our collective awakening process.
Of course. Yeah, I'm here for it.
So I'm actually really interested in your story because I actually had an experience like you had back when I was 21. And mine was actually a result of reading books by Carlos Castaneda at the time, and then John Fowles, and then lots of Zen books, and then stacking that with lots of meditation. So that made me pop in a way that I hit this zero point where if I stood still, the whole world would turn to light around me, and that was it. You know what I mean, right?
Yes. Okay, so we're getting right into it right off the bat.
Yeah. So how about I just introduce you and we'll just get into it?
Let's just start with the zero point. Let's just start there.
Okay.
I love it. Yeah, beautiful.
All right. So I'll say, Aaron French, welcome to Supernormalized. We're eager to hear your story about, I don't know, what would you call it? I mean, mine was like a transition into a new reality.
I mean, absolutely, right? And it's one of these things where it's absolutely a new reality and also 100% the same, right? Entirely different, entirely the same.
Yeah. So can you tell us your story leading up to that experience? I mean, would you say you were like a normal person just leading a normal life, or were you actually actively exploring consciousness in some way?
Yeah. I've been actively exploring consciousness, you know, on the spiritual path for, let's call it, over 25 years, since the late 90s. But, you know, that journey has been a very windy, twisty road where there was, you know, long periods when, you know, I lived with a guru. And then there was periods when I had some bad experiences and I turned my back on spirituality entirely and thought, no, I'm just going to go back to being a rational scientist and I don't believe any of that. And then I would turn back to spirit. So, you know, over that quarter century, there were definitely periods. But in the time when I had, you know, a really deep breakthrough into non-duality and sort of a more universal consciousness, I was absolutely opening my heart, meditating, using the tools that I had learned in some cases decades before. And also, interestingly, you know, this is also what happened is that, you know, I had learned some tools decades before, but I wasn't ready in my energy to receive them. And so certain, I'll call them fruits of my practice, as I opened up, I was doing some somatic work to heal some of my wounding, some shadow work. And as I was doing that work, some of the fruits of practices I had done, you know, decades before would appear before me and enter my body and my consciousness and my energy and flower. And that was also really special. So, you know, it's been a long and magical journey, but yeah, for most of the time, I've been a very eager spiritual aspirant, perhaps.
Would you say then that the universe was plotting to make you change?
Yes, I love that, right? I mean, from one perspective, right, I do deeply believe, and this is like a Taoist view, much of my teachings that I hold most closely are Taoist, you know, and the Taoist perspective is that everything is deeply and inherently neutral, right? And I do think that that's absolutely true from one perspective. And simultaneously, I feel and experience and hold the goodness of the universe and the spiritual guides I have and the helpers and all the support and nudging I've received, you know, all the teachers that magically appeared when I wasn't looking, even appearing like something I didn't expect showing up in my life. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, they were showing me non-duality. They were pushing me in this direction since I was in my early 20s, you know? So absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It does seem like that actually is, what happens for all of us, but the difference is whether you are able to hear it. And in time, you do, and then you can look back. And when you do that looking back, it's like everything was stacked up to make you wake up.
I had a teacher. So one of my first teachers of non-duality at the time, again, earlier in my career, I was a scientist. I was an ecologist. So I was living in the jungle. And even then, here's a small aside, even then in the jungle, I was, you know, my job, my profession, my academic work was studying birds and monkeys in the tropics around the world, which meant I would sit in stillness and focus on a tree or the birds or whatever, but not moving in deep focus for hours and days at a time across many years. Later, when I developed into meditation, I realized I had done, you know, hundreds or thousands of hours of meditation without even fully realizing that's what I was doing. But that was a quick aside. I was in Colorado working as a naturalist, and I met this man who made drums and rattles. And I was really interested, you know, in learning that practice to make these drums, these rawhide hoop drums. And so he agreed to take me to his cabin for the weekend and train me in his craft. And so we get there and I stay overnight on Friday. I wake up Saturday morning and I want to get to it. I want to learn. I want to go. I want to absorb everything. And he just sits quietly and says, you know, we're having some tea. He said, drink your tea. Look at the trees. He's like, just sit here, you know. And the whole weekend went like that, where I was sort of pushing ahead. And he just said, like, just relax, Aaron. Everything is okay. And it wasn't until decades later, it was about 5 years ago, when I looked back and thought of him and realized he was my first deep, powerful teacher of non-duality. He was holding that spaciousness of unity consciousness and was transmitting that to me over the whole time. And I wasn't able to receive that until much later. Yeah.
Well, it went in and it just needed to unfold and flower in your own life. Exactly. You'd be able to even recognize that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So tell me, when you had this experience, I mean, was it something that happened suddenly or was it something that happened slowly over time?
Yeah, I would say slowly over time. And certainly too, you know, one of my teachings, as I mentioned, was Taoist. And my teacher received a transmission from his lineage where the spiritual path has six stages of duality and also then six stages of non-duality. So many sort of levels, little steps all the way through, which I really appreciated through my journey. Sometimes, especially in my lost years, you know, I would forget about this book and I would come back to it and realize, oh, this is where I am in this, from this map's perspective. This is how to get me back on the path. So it's been a long, lots of little steps, but this bigger consciousness shift, you know, it happened during a period when I was actually working 18 hours a day. And I was getting up really early and doing a lot of work that I didn't normally do through a whole range of circumstances. And so when I slipped into it, initially, this expanded state of consciousness, initially I was like, wait a minute, am I just depressed? But I was like, wait, no, I've been depressed on and off throughout my earlier life. And like depression feels heavy and dark and dense and sometimes, you know, sticky and small. And this felt expansive, but it felt like open and spacious, but in a way that I wasn't used to, I wasn't integrated with. And that lasted for a few months. I was talking to my friends and like, yeah, I feel different, but I couldn't quite, of course, I couldn't quite put my finger on it because it was different. And it took a few months of that sort of like uncomfortableness before I recall one morning I was up early and looking at the sunrise. And I remember just like bursting into laughter and then tears and then laughter again and joy, you know, at the majesty and the vibrancy and the immediacy. And this was when, in particular, like the notion of time being like silly putty, just like this part did come like a lightning bolt, like just like where all of a sudden, you know, the whole universe was malleable. Yeah, and I was just weird. Playing in this matrix of yummy goodness of everything.
Yeah.
And in the tradition which I've studied in, this would be the integration of that emptiness of non-duality into myself, where then I could rest there in the non-duality and then experience that in the fullness of the emptiness, right?
Yeah.
There's the fullness of the emptiness, there's the emptiness of the fullness, and we have to unify those in our hearts, in our energy. Yeah.
I completely relate to that. We were talking about the zero point sort of experience, and that sounds like it's right on point for that experience. When I personally went through an experience like that, as I did mention before, but I had it slightly different because I was meditating a lot and anyway, and yeah, as a part of that story, I got in contact with a spirit and I was meditating one day and she just popped into my head and said, open your eyes. You're going to be like this for a while now. And I was like, wait, I'm still meditating. And I thought, do I have to believe this? And so I went through all the tests. Is this a demon? You know, just to make sure I wasn't being harassed because, you know, phenomena happens, you know, we all know that. And it turned out, yeah, she was there to help and educate me in certain ways. But during that time, I actually had that same thing with time. It was wacky. It was so unusual how things were flowing. And I actually could feel different places where time was slower and more dense. Another time, spaces which were just expansive. And it was like, and it wasn't just me. It was like me walking through those spaces, you know. So, yeah, yeah. So
you still hold that, or has that sort of passed as you've gone forward and integrated?
Yeah, well, as I went forward and integrated, there was a point where I was working with this being, and I said, I want to bring everyone up into this consciousness. And she said, for you to get that to happen, you have to become a human again. You've got to let it all go.
Beautiful.
I said, I'm willing to do that. And the very next day, I was baseline consciousness again without the expansiveness. I was like, what? It can go? I couldn't believe it. But yeah, so I went back into being sort of normal. It took away a lot of the phenomena at that time, but it also gave me a yearning to experience it again in a different way, which I really appreciate. And to this day, I've been meditating since, really. And you know, times in my life when things have gone off the rails is when I stop meditating.
And I, you know, I have a deep meditation practice. So, you know, in my work, I'm a medium and Akashic reader and channel, but then I also am a spiritual mentor guide. And, you know, there's so much resistance out there to meditation. I get so many people, you know, asking me, you know, they're committed and they want to work with me and they want to expand their life. And they say, yeah, but do I have to meditate? There's so much of that. And there are other ways for sure, right? There are paths that don't include meditation, but it's been a foundational practice for me. And, you know, even a couple times a year, I'm not especially a Zen person, but I love the Zen retreats where you do the session. I just came from one about a month ago where you sit for 13 hours a day, basically, and you even eat meals in the Zendo in this very ritualized way. And it's just a deep way to like ground in that, you know, about 3 or 4 days in, I was looking at the schedule and I was like, it was the afternoon and I was like, oh, we're almost done. I only have 4 more hours today of meditation.
Wow.
You know, that settling, giving ourselves the time to settle is everything, right? Giving ourselves the time and the energy just to land and allow all the energies which are around us to come in. You know, in my experience is like the earth right now, our whole realm, this whole universe is experiencing this mass awakening. And so these energies are rising and wanting to be heard, to be listened to be felt, to be experienced by all of us humans, by all of us, to connect with all the spirits across all the realms, from the trees to all the beings in the astral realms and beyond. However, we want to speak about all of the vastness of the spiritual experience that we can have as humans. You know, and the groundwork for me for all of that is meditation, 100% as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I sense that as well. We are going through a great change and it is a gradual change, but yeah, there is that. You could almost call it like a demand for attention and connection, and because it's the right time for it, right? But going back to how you were saying how people are quite resistant to meditation, our social culture right now is pretty much caught up in continuous and voluminous distraction. And in being in that, you don't have a space to be in between your own thoughts even, which I find is that Zen space is getting in between. Once you're in between the thoughts, then you hit the zero point. And so that makes it very hard for people. But one of the things I found that works really good for people that are really challenged with sitting still or being still is give them a guided meditation. A good, simple guided meditation can really loop people out because they've got something they've got to focus on. But the thing is, if that guided meditation also has a bit of a hypnotic induction in it, it can actually help them to drop the the distraction loop that they're already in. So it helps them to achieve that space.
That's right. And in our, you know, we have this distraction and we have, you know, the other counterpoint to distraction is like constant stimulation, right? We need this constant input of input. And
something.
So for so many years, you know, in many spiritual traditions, they talk about quieting the mind. And for so many years, I had a really difficult time with that and felt like that was a challenge for me, maybe even a block for me in certain ways. And what shifted for me over several decades was that I realized that for me, my mind has never really, maybe a little bit for sure, but it's never really quieted down. It's more that I've just created some space between all the things which are always happening. And for me, energetically, it's like, okay, my thoughts, I'll just put them a little bit over here. Yeah, that's how it works. And then here I am, you know. And so, you know, so I don't necessarily have to quiet all of that chaos. A little bit, it settles, as much as just realize that I am not all of those thoughts. And that, you know, in Taoism, again, they talk about the heart wisdom, right, as our center. You know, and we have our heart and our connection and our energetic, the way we're held energetically by the universe, that's our center. That's our guiding force. And it's not our thoughts. Our thoughts are just there to keep us safe and keep us aligned in this realm in sort of a physical way.
Perfect.
Nice. Okay. So you mentioned as a part of your story that your mediumship went into overdrive once you had the experience. Can you elaborate on how that happened and then what you mean by overdrive? Did it change in a certain
way? Yeah, I mean, so I first realized that I was receiving messages from beyond when my grandfather passed many, many years ago. And once I realized that connection and that I was actually receiving information and communication from him, other ancestors would start to come to me. And then slowly that expanded over many years. Once I've had this deep awakening experience, what happened is then other spirit guides, higher angels, other beings of different realms would come to me. And also I had a few spirit guides and ancestors come to me for other people previous to my deep awakening. Some, it wasn't zero, but it happened all of a sudden. It became all the time, regularly. And I had to sort of start to mediate that and put some guardrails around how I was receiving those, because it became like a pretty deep flood. So in whatever way, my energy, from one perspective, all of this is just matching of frequencies. From one perspective is one way to talk about this. And so I just feel like from that perspective of the universe, my frequency had just shifted, wherein I was in this band of energy where I was just receiving all of these messages. But certainly too, it was after this awakening that I was receiving messages and communication from higher beings. Ouroboros was one of the early ones that would come to me and communicate, really old spirit. You know, Jesus comes and speaks with me in various times. Shiva is one of those beings that comes and wants to communicate, etc. You know, and those levels of beings were not communicating with me in that way. I think that they were, but I wasn't receiving them directly and knowing who they were in the way that I am now and after that shift.
Okay. And did they give you any specific messages that, you know, you could share to the world, or was it personal sort of stuff?
No, they have. Yeah. Over time they have. I mean, Ouroboros came to me and really emphasized the depth and timelessness of humanity, and just reminded me that the timeline that we're talking about in terms of this human experience is vast, right? The timeline of this human experience, of this soul experience on this realm, is vast and deep, far beyond what our current history, you know, it's getting there, but most of our current Western history acknowledges a lesser time frame. And Ouroboros showed me the depth of time that we've had these experiences. And that's been really important in my work, just really holding for every soul that's come through, the depth of experience that we've had is just, again, it's just so vast that all we can do in that vastness is just surrender to this moment and be grateful in ways. That's one of the biggest messages. You know, Shiva comes through and I get two messages from Shiva as a being. And I had worked previously for many years, you know, in a Shivite tradition and had done mantra and rituals, etc. It wasn't until, again, many years later with my awakening when Shiva started to come to me and speak to me directly and have this communication. And really, he gives me these two messages that, you know, we can, in the stillness, we're also holding the universe. As we meditate in our stillness, we really are holding the universe. And this really is, you know, this whole message about as above, so within, as without, so within, as above, so below. as well as the simultaneous sort of analogous message of when we heal ourselves, we heal the world. And that's really what he's pushed to me. And really, he just pushes these images of healing to me that, yes, this is true. This is real. This is the healing that the world needs. You know, for years as a scientist, I became a conservationist and worked in sustainability for the natural world. And you know, I'm certain in every way that the work I do now has a bigger impact on sustainability in the natural world than all of the work I was doing as a scientist or an advocate for sustainability, as we just work collectively to heal ourselves and heal others around us in our communities and come into our energy and be in alignment with the natural world around us. The healing on all levels occurs. And that's been one of the deep messages from Shiva. Mm-hmm. And from Jesus, you know, he is just, the way he comes through for me is that the way he communicates with me and the message that he passes to me is just pure loving joy. I mean, just he's just so happy and stoked about everyone and everything. It's almost as if, and I say this with the deepest love and respect, like it's almost like he's like the ultimate surfer dude, where he's just like so stoked about every moment of connection and joy and loving. And so his balm is, you know, and this isn't all the true scriptures of just that pure love is the medicine, but just in this wave, this ocean tsunami, but soft of just like healing, loving presence that just washes over everything and makes everything flower. So those are quick synopses of those different energies that come.
Yeah. So you had a bit of time with the Baka people, sorry.
Baka.
Yeah, can you tell us about that? I mean, what was that?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question. Yeah, so I lived for a couple of years. This was back in the day, again, when I was studying the birds and monkeys and looking at forest regeneration. So looking at how the birds and monkeys would disperse the seeds and then poop them out or regurgitate them and then grow new trees. While I was doing that, I was there. So this was in Cameroon in the Congo Basin rainforest. I was there for about 2 years over two different times. And these Baka hunter-gatherers were my guides. And so I would just walk in the forest. We would work 6 days a week. We'd just walk around the forest and sit and explore all day long, every day from dawn until the evening. And this has been their home tribally, collectively since beyond time. So we would just walk around and I would be with my binoculars, with my notebook, writing down about monkeys and plants and birds. And they would be supporting me in that and also collecting the mushrooms and the fruits and barks and, you know, collecting wild honey and all the things just all the time. And they were just, the biggest thing I received from them was like, they were so deeply part of the forest that they didn't need anything. You know, so I would go in the forest with my backpack and I would collect things to take back to my friends and colleagues at camp. And they would just go in the forest and they would just eat and enjoy what was there. And I would be like, but don't we need to share this with somebody else? And they would sort of look at me confused and be like, but they're also out in the forest getting what they need right now. Everyone is nourished immediately and completely in the moment in a way that was so holistically simple that it took me, again, a long time to sort of integrate that. Until I realized, like, right, the complete zero-point non-duality of nourishment in every moment of their existence was so complete that it was just taken for granted in a way that was just, like, super normal. A completely just ground level, like, of course we're at one with all things and everything that we need is provided whenever we need it. Like, absolutely without question. It was just like embedded so deeply into every part of their way that there was no other way to even think about anything. You know, and even when they would play music, or, you know, and we would play music together, they would sing with the forest. They would sing with the forest. You know, and they would, you know, part of the Baka tradition is that they drum on the water. They drum on the rivers and streams that are there, and they sing, and they play a small little forest harp that they make. And the songs are all songs that they play with the water and the trees and the wind and the sky and the creaking of the, you know, all of its part. It's one song. Everything is one song.
Beautiful.
The non-duality of all of that is just, again, it's so simple and yet so absolute. It's just completely profound and mm-hmm. changed my worldview and just steeped me again in this stillness and acceptance that everything is here for us completely without question.
Yeah. It sounds like it's being in complete accord with the universe as is needed and as necessary.
In a way that you know, the Western world, we're coming back to it, right? We're having these conversations and we've had these journeys away from that and coming back to it into those cultures. And it's changing now with Westernization. But in those cultures, I got a glimpse of this culture that still had, and hopefully still has, it's been some years now. They never moved away from it from childhood. They just were immersed in it. They didn't have to rediscover and come back on this journey like we've been talking about. Yeah, magical, magical, deeply magical.
It's good, though, that the West now is embracing authenticity and of being, and mindfulness is even practiced and taught in corporate scenes, you know, to bring people just to ground, you know, just so you can actually have a better work-life balance. It's about time these things are happening.
Time. It's exactly the right time, right? Of course. This is the time.
Can you explain natural heart alchemy and what Absolutely. It means to you?
Yeah, thank you. So Natural Heart Alchemy, that's my Instagram and my website. And, you know, coming from that many years of studying Taoism, right? Again, the heart center is the core. The heart is, as an energetic core of our being, is the place that harmonizes and integrates our experience in the universe. Of course, we have, you know, we receive higher messages from other channels above and below. But the heart is the center of that. And the way I've been shown our chakra system even is that the heart is like at the center of a propeller where we have our higher chakras and our lower chakras that spin around. I've seen this in visions and meditation. They actually spin around in a 360 way around our heart. And our heart is at the core of that. So I wanted to bring in that heart wisdom into the name and brand of what I'm bringing forward. And then the alchemy is just the transformation, right? When we're through the practices of mindfulness, through the practices of meditation, through all of the ways that we can be here together and individually with the universe, we truly are alchemizing. Our bodies are these amazing crucibles of transformation. And we know this, right? We take this for granted that we can eat an apple and it provides fuel for our day. And we just take that for granted as normal. And it's the same thing when we receive the energy from the universe as we go through our world, whether it's a busy, stressful day down at work or whether it's a walk in the forest, we're receiving the energy from all of those interactions all the time. And we actually have completely and absolutely the ability with our energy and with our bodies, with our energy bodies, to transform all of that and use it for our highest connection with all things. And that's the natural heart alchemy that I'm talking about. And it's natural because it's just our natural birthright. This isn't special. This isn't something that, you know, that you or I have, that we have these experiences that we're different from anyone else or anything like that. It's not, oh, I have to be some special person in the Himalayas in a cave. This is just our birthright for every single human. And more of us are coming to that appreciation. You know, I mean, when telling these stories, and even that's why I speak of myself as a mentor, and not some other word, just out of deep humility of like, I'm here to share with you my journey and share with people the tools I've used and my advice for different stages of the path. But as just someone that maybe has like walked on the trail around the corner a little bit farther than you perhaps, and then I come back and I meet you and I can just say, oh, there's a rock slide up there, go this way, it'll be easier. Just as simple as that. It's not special at all in any possible way. We all have it. It's completely natural for every single human.
Yeah, totally agreed. Totally agreed. What's a simple way for people to tap into their own alchemical potential?
I'm going to give two options for people. I mean, increasingly, the world and the plants and the trees in particular are coming up and wanting to reach out to us. And so, you know, there are these terms now of like forest bathing and being out in nature in these really intentional ways. But I really deeply, you know, for someone who's just coming into this path and needs a gentle way to enter into these energies, I really deeply just encourage a walk in nature and then maybe finding a little spot that feels comfortable beneath a tree, perhaps, maybe on a bench or on the ground, wherever, and just sit in nature gently at first without any other preconceptions. Just as much as it feels right, just open up and receive that healing energy from the natural world, and particularly the guidance of the trees. Right now, I'm shown repeatedly and continuously that they're here for us and reaching out in ways to support this transformation. And they're really powerful alchemical beings of transference of energy and being able to channel that to us and for us in ways that was really deeply resonant. And again, science is proving we walk in the forest and we change our, you know, our energy in various ways. So that's my, you know, my first gentlest recommendation. And then I recommend, you know, coming into your breath and using your breath, whether that's sitting down, and that could be open-eyed walking meditation, right? Just walking down the street, you know, between you're at work and you have a lunch hour and you're going to walk to the sandwich shop, or maybe you eat at your desk and you have time just to walk. You can just walk gently and just be aware of your breath in and out. And become aware slowly that even, you know, the breath that we breathe in is actually equal in its expansiveness to the breath without, because there's actually no boundary. We have actually no boundary, and it comes through. Again, in Taoism, there's this idea of pore breathing, where we actually breathe out energetically through every single pore in our body, from the bottoms of our toes, you know, everywhere, the backs of our knees, our top of our head, every pore. So as we breathe in through our noses, we can become aware that we're breathing out into the universe and connecting, and then breathing in through all of our pores and then out through our mouth and nose. There's lots of tools, of course, with breath in many, many, many traditions. And, you know, everyone has it. There's nothing special that we need for that. And it's deeply available. And I'm also a very strong proponent and advocate for open-eyed meditation. You know, there's many forms. And if you're practicing a tradition where it's closed-eyed, and you have some forms, and I respect that absolutely. And what I've realized after, you know, 20 plus years of doing a Taoist meditation that's open-eyed, is that when you are used to having the open visual, even if it's soft gaze without any focus during meditation, it's a much easier transition to carrying that into life. So then when you're sitting in the car at a red light, you can just take a breath, maybe correct your posture a tiny bit, and just drop into even 20 seconds of meditation. And of course, there's no time. So even 20 seconds at a red light, once you have that awareness, can change your whole day. And that's easier when we have our eyes open and we have some awareness of the world around us. And so I really advocate for people to just practice with that awareness, meditating with the world with their eyes open, and carrying that through the practice throughout the rest of life.
But don't do it when you're driving.
No, of course. And, you know, all the caveats, not while you're driving, but if you're stopping, say, for a quick second once you've had the groundwork, all of that. Yeah, no, for sure.
Now, sometimes I'll do that if I'm, because I drive a lot. And so if I'm finding myself a bit tense from the drive, I will pull over and just find a spot and just sit there and soak up the world and reset. But yeah, find a nice parking spot and look at the trees.
I mean, meditation's magical in that way, where once you have a deep groundwork of, you know, there is something magical for, you know, meditating every single day and for times of your life doing longer periods of meditation every day.
Absolutely.
And once you have that groundwork, though, it is amazing how powerful 30 seconds can be, you know, yeah. If you have a moment or a minute can be anytime.
Yeah. So what are you doing with this work now? I mean, you must be at a certain point in your life where that you're starting to distill the information to others. How are you doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I say, I do offer sessions in a variety of ways, and I'll do sessions with people that are primarily Akashic readings. I'll do sessions where I'll open the time funnel, if you will, and do ancestral healings. I'll work with people with shadow work. So there's a number of
the spirits to do that. Like when you're talking with somebody, do you have them, and like sometimes a spirit will pop in and say, you've got to tell him this.
Absolutely. So yeah, I love that. So the way it works with me as well, you know, and so people come into the session maybe with a purpose, you know, and as we work with people, there has to be something that they latch onto to connect with us. But in the moment, as you say, in the moment, it might not exactly look like I think. And the way it works for me is I do, especially when I'm doing connecting with other realms, is that the first frequency band I go through when I connect up is the ancestors. And they, not every time, but they often want to speak, and they'll be very active and want to jump in and give, you know, loving advice for their loved ones and their family member, et cetera. And then when I sort of tune, once that's complete transmission, I'll tune a little higher where it's spirit guides broadly, angels, other beings that want to speak in service of this person I'm working with. And again, those messages are pushed to me. You know, they come in if they want to speak, and they'll tell me who they are and what how they want to work with this person. And very often, too, I get a lot of people who come to me and want just affirmation that they actually are receiving these messages already from their spirit guides and other beings. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm feeling that, but I don't really trust it. And I work with them to sort of deepen that intuition and connection with those beings. And then I tune up to the next frequency band, which for me is the Akashic field and the Akashic records. And that's, you know, a realm of information where then I personally have to actively pull down the information in service of whatever I'm working with the person. And, you know, and before we do this, of course, we connect and sort of align on what is the question, what are the energies people are working with. So I do those types of sessions with people. That's a lot of what I do. And then separate from that, but simultaneously, I do spiritual mentoring, where we'll work one-on-one with meditation, with other clearings, with other mentoring guidance based on where the person is on the path. And this primarily follows this Taoist 12-stage view of spiritual experience that my teacher had a transmission from his lineage. So I do that. I'm teaching a course in January about the golden flower, which will be a really deep dive. It's the secret of the golden flower, which is a modern synthesis of Taoist thought from about 200 years ago. But that's very, very modern for Taoism. And it's a deep dive into meditation and consciousness and breath and non-duality over a whole number of months. So we'll go through 100 plus days of meditation, which is the amount of time in that book, which they said, if you're serious about this and take this to heart and do this practice, for certain, the golden light will flower in your heart.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Doing that. And then I also do some men's work. I'm working with men's groups to bring forth the magic in our hearts and our connection to the universe in the divine masculine.
Yeah, beautiful.
Ways to work. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing some wonderful work there, Aaron. And I wanted to know, so tell us more about your website and how people can find you. We're actually getting towards the end of the podcast now.
Absolutely. So my website is naturalheartalchemy.com. So all my programs and offerings are there. And then my Instagram is actually the exact same thing. It's at Natural Heart Alchemy. And I certainly post my things there, and as well as channeled messages and other things that I receive there on Insta.
Excellent.
So those are the two ways to connect with me.
Do you do that as reels on Insta, or how do you do it?
I do those as reels on Insta. And
definitely
and,
subscribing then.
Yeah. And they go through in waves. There's weeks and weeks when I'm just like constant stuff's coming through. And then sometimes they give me a little break, and then it goes in waves again. But yeah, and it's interesting to try to capture them in that, you know, that I'm not, you know, that short time frame. For sure. Yeah. It's an interesting experience. So, but it's useful to transmit these messages that get transmitted from beyond and bring them down into a shorter, you know, of information to be received, I think is a valuable.
If there was a message that you could transmit to the whole world so everyone could hear it, what?
Yeah. You know, the deepest message right now that's coming through is just like all of us are so deeply loved and held. You know, we're talking briefly about all these beings across all these realms. You know, the angels, our spirit guides, all the gods and goddesses, all the beings in whatever framework that you believe in, they're rooting for us in a way that like most people, I couldn't fathom before I felt and experienced it. We're so supported. We're so loved. And all these, you know, especially our spirit guides and angels that are closer to us are right here to support us. And they are supporting each and every one of us completely all the time, even when we don't realize it. And, you know, the quick answer to connecting with those is just gratitude and a yearning from our hearts. When we reach up from our hearts with gratitude and love and just like this yearning of like, please connect with me. I need you. Then that's when they come in deeper into our life and deeper magic can really unfold.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've heard before from other people, the angels just sitting there right at your shoulder and they're waiting for you to ask. That's all you have to do. Just ask for the help.
And they aren't allowed to come through until we ask.
Yes.
And the deeper we ask from our heart space, the deeper we ask with the deeper love, the more angels and the deeper support that we can receive is how I'm shown.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Aaron French, thank you so much for your sharing of your knowledge and your experience and your wisdom on today's show. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure the listeners will as well.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy. And again, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'll just say goodbye to listeners. That was a really good episode with Aaron just now. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please reach out to him and thank him for coming on the show. And I want to say, yeah, it was really good to hear that somebody had been through such a profoundly deep experience and is spreading that deep love and connection to the world with the world. If you've enjoyed today's show, please share this to a friend who you know that will like it. That'd be really appreciated. And if you're on YouTube, like and subscribe. And if you're in a podcast app, give us 5 stars and say something nice. That'd be really cool. And thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, it's bye for now.